Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This school year is unlike any other. Almost all districts in Iowa have been back in session for at least a month now. In some districts, it's almost business as usual with extra safety measures in place. Many districts offer hybrid learning where students attend in-person classes about half the time and learn online or do independent study for the other half. Most districts offer an online option, although that comes in many different forms. And so far, Des Moines schools have all been online, although that's about to change in the near future. This hour, we want to know how it's going. And if you have students in your household, we would love to hear from you. What's working? What's not? We'll also hear from teachers and administrators throughout the hour. But to start us off, Iowa Public Radio reporters Grant Gerlach in Des Moines and Katie Pikus in Western Iowa are here. Hello, Grant.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you for being here. And hello, Katie.
Hey, Charity.
Thank you for being here. And Grant, I want to start with some very sad news. We learned yesterday that a paraeducator in the West Des Moines School District has passed away from COVID-19. The district announced that Jennifer Crawford had died in an email yesterday. She worked at Indian Hills Junior High School. And I realize this news is very fresh, so we don't really know how people are reacting to it. But she is one of the first educators to lose their lives to COVID-19 in Iowa.
Yeah, as you mentioned, she was a special education assistant at a junior high in West Des Moines and died of complications from COVID-19. The Des Moines Register reported that the district couldn't confirm where she contracted the virus. They did say she was out of state when she became ill. So we don't know a lot of details about how she became sick or if it happened at school, possibly. But, you know, teachers becoming sick, teachers dying, students becoming severely ill, those are the worst fears that people have, administrators, families, everyone involved in the education system. And so to see those worst fears come true is a big blow.
Yeah. Let's talk about what we are seeing, what we do know about in districts around the state. And Katie, let's start out west with you and one of the bigger districts in the western part of the state. Sioux City has had some drama in recent weeks over their online learning program. Tell me what's been going on.
Yeah, so within the first 13 days of school, the district said that nearly 900 students who tried virtual learning decided to return to the classroom. And, 900 students, that sort of made up close to a third of all of the students that were going to be virtually learning this year. The district had a little over 3,000 learning virtually. And, yeah, so nearly 900 students dropped it. And the district's explanation for that was, some families realized that this was a lot more difficult than they had imagined. The district had 50 teachers dedicated to virtual learning only this year, and they were basically running virtual learning as if it were its own school district rather than, say, zooming in to like an in-person class, for example. So, yeah, it was really difficult for some families. They dropped it, and the district heard of some issues like overcrowding in class, for example, like one class having 55 students.
So they had a lot more students sign up for online than they were expecting, it sounds like, and then a whole bunch abandon online learning right away. And it's interesting, Katie, because a lot of districts that offer their own online learning and don't contract with another company, they ask for a commitment. For example, in the Iowa City School District, you commit to online learning by the trimester. I know that other schools are doing different things. Sioux City didn't have that kind of commitment?
Well, I recall the superintendent saying during a news conference before school started that they were asking families to commit for at least a quarter. But then during that school board meeting where they said, nearly 900 students dropped it, the superintendent was saying that they felt that having students commit to at least a quarter was a little bit too rigid.
Interesting. And so that must have sent them scrambling with the online classes because they obviously weren't meeting people's needs or expectations. But that had to create a crisis in the schools as well, because all of a sudden there's an influx of students learning face to face.
Yeah, the term we've been hearing from the school district is that they've had to balance classes, which means essentially shifting teachers around and, you know, moving some, evening out some class sizes. And, you know, to virtual learning, they had to add in 5 teachers so that they could even out those class sizes in virtual learning a little bit.
So, all right, things are still shuffling in Sioux City. Let's talk about some of the smaller districts in the state. And Katie, I know that you've been reporting on a lot of rural districts. And I mentioned that some districts are basically back to business as usual. What do you think the mix is of the districts that you've been observing?
I'd say a lot of districts are trying to go about business as usual, especially in Northwest Iowa, where some of the superintendents I've spoken with have said, you know, they just feel that in-person learning is what's best for their students and their mental health after, you know, missing out on so much school last spring. So I've heard from school districts that have said, you know, we're doing what we can to keep our students in class. One school district that I spoke with over email decided to, you know, social distance students better, you know, having social distancing being the solution rather than moving to hybrid or virtual learning. And what they ended up doing was basically using spaces in movie theaters in town so that their high school students could go, you know, learn at a movie theater and, you know, safely social distance 6 feet apart. And, you know, other school districts are revising their social distancing policies so that they can have students at a safe distance but keep their students in class.
And some of the districts that have continued learning in person have actually met the qualifications that the governor has set for requesting a waiver,
right,
to move online. And if you look at a map of COVID cases in the state, there's sort of this bright red ring in northwestern Iowa. But you're finding that districts are really reluctant to ask for that waiver?
I'm finding that, I don't know if I would say reluctant to ask for the waiver, but, you know, for now, they're trying to keep students in class. And I mean, like, even with the Iowa Department of Public Health changing its quarantine guidance, and, you know, that quarantine guidance now says if an infected person and people they were in close contact with were wearing masks properly, the close contacts don't have to quarantine. A lot of those Northwest Iowa school districts were not requiring masks at first, and now because of this new guidance, they've put some sort of a requirement in place.
All right, so if they're requiring masks now, that gives them the ability to keep more students in school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So although the governor has not created any kind of a mask mandate, changing that guidance has been an incentive for some districts. And I want to mention Hamburg. That's a district that recently got a waiver to go virtual for 2 weeks. And of course, Hamburg, Iowa has been through so much. But tell me about their unique situation right now, because again, it's not exactly the situation that we envisioned when districts might go virtual.
It's not. So, you know, the state has set these sort of benchmarks that, you know, you'd be in a county with a positivity rate over a 2-week period of, you know, 15% or more, and 10% of your students would be absent. But in a small county like Fremont County that, you know, has that positivity rate of over 15% currently, you know, you're also dealing with a really small school district like Hamburg that only has about 150 kids. And although they don't currently have a lot of cases among students, the last number I got from them about how many staff were absent was, I believe, 6. So, you know, 6 teachers at this point have tested positive for COVID-19 and a couple more results are pending. And the problem with that is they basically run out of staff that they could put in front of students in a physical classroom. So they had no choice but to request a waiver. You know, if they don't have subs, they virtual learning is their only option. So Hamburg got that waiver from the state and started virtual learning yesterday.
And how will they do virtual learning? I mean, they're still really short of teachers. Do you know?
Yeah, the superintendent told me that he might chip in to help teach virtual learning. But, you know, with it being online over Zoom, you know, if you're a teacher that's simply quarantining, for example, you could still teach. I know that he had told me when we talked on Friday, he was going to check in with teachers on Sunday and see how they were feeling. So I haven't yet checked in with them yesterday or today about how that's going so far. But yeah, I'm sure that's something I'll follow up on later this week.
Well, and of course, thinking back to your reporting from the spring from Western Iowa and the Hamburg area was part of that conversation, it can be really tricky to connect with students in rural areas online because of connectivity issues. Is that a concern for Hamburg as well?
It was a concern in the spring. And what the district started doing was, you know, they made sure that families who did not have access to internet got access. So the district was delivering hotspots to some families while they were also delivering school meals to them too. So yeah, they just really wanted to make sure that every family had connectivity.
Can you give me a sense for how the administrators that you've talked to in various districts are feeling about how things are going? Is there a general vibe?
I know that there is a lot of concern. There's also the sense of, you know, we knew that this was going to happen at some point for our school district. You know, I mean, how can it be avoided, you know, having, you know, to quarantine, having to have, you know, your school district go virtual or, you know, requesting a waiver to go virtual, that's going to be a choice that's put in front of a lot of school districts over the course of this year. So I know that when I had spoken with the superintendent of the Sibley Otedon School District in Northwest Iowa's Osceola County, one of the things he said to me was, I haven't had a conversation about education in a couple of weeks. You know, it's all been about quarantine and isolation and COVID-19, you know, since the start of the school year.
Yeah. Well, Katie Pikus, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us. And Grant Gerlach, stay with us. We have a lot more to talk about this hour. But Katie, thank you.
Thanks, Charity.
Iowa Public Radio reporter Katie Pikus, Grant Gerlach will stick around. And we also want to hear from you. How's it going in your household? 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. School has been back in session for at least a month in most districts in Iowa, and school can look very different depending on what district you're in. COVID-19 makes this a challenging educational environment no matter where you are, but the Cedar Rapids district has had even more challenges than most. When the derecho hit in August, all buildings in the district were damaged, some severely. Cedar Rapids went back to school on September 21st. The families of elementary students were able to choose between online learning or an in-person plan. Older students have been online only. And with me now is Jason Klein. He is principal of Kennedy High School in Cedar Rapids, a school that sustained serious damage. Thank you so much for being here today, Jason.
My pleasure, Charity.
So how is school going from your perspective?
Well, I think as well as it possibly could. I've been very impressed with the work our teachers have done, and the engagement level our students are experiencing right now is higher than I anticipated. So I'd say, considering the circumstances, very well.
Well, and considering the circumstances, I know that there are a lot of people in the Cedar Rapids area who were without internet for a very long time, and some families have actually become homeless because of the derecho. Can you give me an idea of some of the challenges that the students in your district are dealing with?
Absolutely. So the district reported that we're doubling the number of students indicating that they are in a homeless situation than we had at this time last year. There's definitely an impact from the derecho there. Internet has been an issue. It remains an issue for a lot of families as well. So the district has been doing quite a bit to help folks who don't have internet access or are still waiting on repairs. by providing hotspots to families that need them, and also opening internet hub locations around the city for students to go to so that they can participate in their virtual classes.
Do you have a number of what percentage of students you have been able to engage with this way?
Engage in terms of?
Of school this year. I'm sure there are some students that you haven't been able to connect with.
Well, actually, I was pleasantly surprised that by the end of the first week of school, we had connected with every family in our building and found out those that had not attended classes yet where they were. Some had actually moved. Some had gone to different schools and not told us, but we were able to locate everyone.
That's wonderful. And are there efforts to provide social support or emotional support to students in addition to online education? I know that's such an important part of school in a typical year.
Absolutely. So we've expanded the use of Tanager Place, which is a local organization that provides mental health supports. And the number of hours that our school-based therapist is available has expanded as well. So she's available to do both online and in-person sessions with students. And we've seen a little bit of an uptick in requests for that. A lot of families have also sought support outside of the school directly with Tanager or other organizations.
What are you most concerned about right now? What's keeping you up at night?
There's a couple of things are concerns to me. One is, of course, the ability to build relationships with kids is very difficult over the online learning process, and we're learning how to do that better. Losing students who become disengaged is a constant worry that I have. But our teachers and our support staff are really taking advantage of the resources that we've been able to give them and the resources that they have to connect with families and connect with the students themselves to make sure that if a student's starting to feel like they're getting disengaged with the online learning, that we can get them back in the fold.
Now, I mentioned that every building in the Cedar Rapids School District sustained some kind of damage from the derecho. Your high school was particularly hard hit. For people who aren't aware, give us an idea of what happened to your school on August 10th.
So just about every part of our roof was damaged, and then holes that got ripped into the roof during the storm caused significant water damage within the building. So we lost access to our building on the 10th, and we still don't have access back. Most of the school buildings in Cedar Rapids, staff is back working at those buildings. And then, of course, the elementary schools and many of the middle schools, they have students back in the buildings now. Kennedy, it doesn't look like we'll have students back in the building until January. They're working on repairing drywall right now. They've dried out most of the roof, and so roof repairs will begin. But we also lost our stage, our black box theater, our gym floor, our main office area. So all of those areas are going to need some significant time to repair.
All right. So even with students coming back, hopefully in January, it sounds like it's still going to be a long process after that.
It could be, yeah, especially the gym floor and the auditorium could take some extra time.
Since your teachers can't get in the building, does that mean teachers for Kennedy High are teaching from home?
Yes, most of our teachers are teaching from home. We have a few that are actually a church here in Cedar Rapids. Veritas Church has offered space for those teachers that don't have a good internet connection at home right now. And so about a half dozen of our teachers are teaching from that church. And we're very thankful that they were generous with their space for us for that. But yeah, the rest of our teachers are currently teaching from home.
Wow. Well, what a strange, strange year we're living in. Jason Klein, best of luck to you. I hope things continue to go well and get a whole lot better.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Jason Klein is the principal of Kennedy High School in Cedar Rapids. You're listening to Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. With me now, Iowa Public Radio reporter Grant Gerlach. And Grant, we've focused so far on Western Iowa. We've heard from Cedar Rapids. Let's talk about Des Moines, because that's a district that many eyes have been on throughout this school year. They started with a fully virtual learning plan, and the governor did not approve of that. Tell me what's going on now.
No, so it was about a month ago they started school all online without state permission. And that's how it's been up to this point, but that's about to start changing after the district approved a plan to start phasing in-person classes. So next week, they'll start with the preschools and start bringing students partially back in person. And that'll be followed the week after with elementary, the week after that, middle school. And then on November 10th, when they start a new term, they'll bring the high schools back. And part of the reason for stretching it out like that is just to figure out the logistics. I mean, it's a lot to figure out how to bring all these schools back online. And so they're trying to space it out a bit to try to work out all the kinks, especially with things like busing. But also that'll give them a chance to keep an eye on conditions in the school in terms of coronavirus cases that crop up and potential outbreaks in those elementary and middle schools. So that's something they want to keep close track on. But until they get those high schools back in person, they're still not meeting the state guidelines to provide at least 50% of instruction in person. So it won't be until those high school classes go back that they're back to the point where they're on track as far as the governor and the State Department of Education are concerned.
Right. And that is a huge crisis for the district. Tell me what happens in Des Moines if there's not a deal struck, if all of this virtual learning doesn't, quote, count.
Yeah, and the state says it won't. So what do they have to do? Well, a lot of that isn't clear. The state has initiated a citation, is what it's called, and that puts the district in a process where it has to work with the Department of Education, and this could eventually go to the State Board of Education to work out a plan to come back into compliance. And of course, the district says, well, once the coronavirus is over, we'll be back in compliance because we won't have to worry about all these issues in our classrooms. But they still have to figure out what to do about these virtual days that were unapproved. The state said in a document released last week that schools that have been in virtual learning without permission, they don't have to make up every single day that they were virtual because they can be up to 50% virtual without seeking permission from the state. So they would have to make up half, basically. And that would be at the end of the year. They would have to make up half the days that they didn't meet when they were virtual without permission. They could also try to make it up earlier than that if they extended the school day or if they have, you know, teacher training days that they could turn into education days, you know, days with classes with students. So they might be able to make some of it up before the end of the year, but then they would be expected to make up for it when most schools are dismissed for the summer. But then there's a limit to that because schools have a deadline to have all their instructional hours in place, and that's June 30th. So if they have to make up more time than is possible to make up by June 30th, then there's just sort of a rock wall that they run into, and they'll have to work that out with the state.
Well, and Grant, I know that you're close to this story. You live in the Des Moines district, right?
Yeah.
All right. So you've got kids living this reality right now, but you've also been covering all of the school board meetings and talking to other parents. There have been a lot of fissures created in this district. It sounds to me that everybody's frustrated.
Yeah, because initially, the school board was pretty solid on the fact that they just didn't want to go back in person. They didn't believe it was safe. But that has slowly eroded away for many of the school board members, enough for them to take this path now. And there are a couple things going on. One is just sort of the lever that's being applied by the state. But the other is pressure from families, and in particular, disadvantaged families. You know, Des Moines has a large portion of the student body lives in poverty. A large portion of the student body are students of color. There are many students that come from refugee families. And there was an event a few weeks ago where some folks involved with community groups that work with those groups of students came out and just made pretty clear the potential consequences for those students. We're talking about families, refugee families that aren't familiar with the technology that is required, where the parents may not speak English and be able to help their students troubleshoot problems with their laptops. So even if they can get them internet and a laptop, it may still be a big ask to have them work through all those other obstacles to be at school every day online. And that's one of the big things that's been sort of changing the direction that the school board is taking. And it's been a long process. These have been long meetings with a lot of discussion and a lot of disagreement. And it's not totally over yet.
Wow. Well, I'm sure that we will continue to hear more from you about what's going on in Des Moines. And we want to hear from people all over the state about how things are going in your household, what kind of educational plan you've chosen for your children, and what's working. Also, what's not working. We're already getting a number of tweets, and you can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Katie says, we've been 100% virtual, and it's been going well for my students. I teach deaf students in Des Moines Public Schools, and there are definitely challenges, but we're finding so many positives. We also heard from Sarah, who says virtual school was such a disaster that we pulled our kids and are homeschooling. So after I teach all day, completely reinventing as I go because we can't sing in music class, I go home and I teach my kids. Rebecca says almost completely asynchronous virtual learning for junior high students in Cedar Falls. Basically a complete disaster, expecting teens to manage a learning format college students struggle with. And Grant, I just want to underline the fact that virtual learning looks different in pretty much every district. I'm in Iowa City. Both of my kids are learning online, so I'm really familiar with what Iowa City has developed. But then I'm talking to parents all over the state, and it just sounds radically different wherever anybody else is. So it's really hard to compare district to district in this story, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. There are some districts that are basically bringing students into the classroom virtually while students in the classroom physically are being taught. So they're sort of like fly on the wall, watching the teacher through their laptop. Other districts have, you know, dedicated virtual classrooms, dedicated physical classrooms, and then staff that are assigned to each mode of teaching. There are different platforms that are using, from Zoom to Microsoft Teams, that can change how things work technically. There are different platforms that they use when they're not in class virtually, you know, that work differently. So it's a lot for teachers to figure out. It's a lot for parents to figure out all at the same time, and, you know, students to figure out too.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you see differences across the districts. And I think what they're all trying to figure out is how to best get students to connect with the material. And they're also still trying to figure out where students are from last spring when they missed so much class, too.
Let's go to the phones here quickly. Amanda is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Amanda.
How are you?
Good. Now, you have your children, small children, learning online in Spencer, and you're one of the few families in your community?
Right. There's not, in our district, the Spencer Community School District, we're one of the only in Northwest Iowa that has both a mask mandate and an online option. And there's not a lot of families that chose the online option. And because of that, our teacher, so I have a preschooler and a first grader, and their teacher has four different grades that she is teaching. She has pre-K, kinder kids, which is kind of a transitional kindergarten and first grade. And so she definitely has her plate full. But the thing that I think I'm amazed with the most is her ability to still connect with my kids I thought they would recognize me as their teacher, and that's definitely not the case. They get a lot of feedback with her. They have a lot of FaceTime with her on the computer, and they, even though they're at home with me, they tell me that they love their teacher and they are proud of their work and are excited to show her things. So it's been a very positive experience in our family. So.
Oh, that's so good to hear. Amanda, thank you so much for sharing your experience today. You can join us as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Grant Gerlach, Iowa Public Radio reporter, and we'll be checking in with a few other districts here in the next few minutes as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation ICOR Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're checking in with schools. They've been back in session for more than a month in most of the state, and school looks very different depending on what district you're in. We'd love to hear from you about how things are going in your household. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio reporter Grant Gerlach has been following all of the many source stories in education this year, and he is with me in just a moment. We're going to talk about student teachers, but I want to share some of the feedback I'm getting. This is from Susan. She says, my daughter wishes she had chosen the 100% online option, except three of her classes weren't available in online only. In her AP calculus class, they sit in a classroom and watch their teacher by Zoom on their Chromebooks while he teaches from another high school. There are not enough teachers available in our building to have a teacher in front of them, but asking questions is difficult in this format. Her Spanish teacher is overwhelmed. She can't figure out the system to assign homework, so she's made up her own, and none of the students can figure out how to find their assignments. The admin doesn't seem willing to teach her how to use the system the rest of the school is using, so these kids don't miss assignments. And that teacher knows people who've died of COVID and is having a hard time coping. Her business teacher doesn't like to wear a mask despite the school policy to wear one. Other students follow his lead and remove their masks in class, and my daughter's very uncomfortable. She comes home every day telling me how many kids were not there. She knows they must be quarantined or sick, but gets no info if she wasn't in the class that made them get quarantined. It's nerve-wracking. At lunch, she goes out to her car to eat by herself because she's too uncomfortable, and it's worrying for her to eat in the cafeteria where everyone needs to eat with their masks off. So that's a student perspective there. Here's a teacher in Spencer who asked to remain anonymous. We are face-to-face, but have mandatory face coverings, and I, for one, am grateful. The littles do surprisingly well with masks, for real. The governor's new rules made about quarantine are frustrating. Again, are a reminder to that if people are properly wearing masks, they don't have to quarantine, was the change that the governor made. She says, this teacher says Northwest Iowa has huge percentages. The amount of extra work for teachers is exhausting. Cleaning, sanitizing, being nurse, teaching online students while also teaching in person. We've never been so exhausted by October, and I worry about being so physically drained when, not if, I get COVID, I will be unable to fight it off. As an educator, I feel disrespected and devalued by the state government and even some parents. Am I glad to be with my kids? Yes. Do I think it will continue to be safe? No. It's a matter of how long we can keep up mitigation strategies. And honestly, as I clean for hours each day, I wonder if it will make a difference or is it pointless? And Grant, before we go to our next guest, just briefly, of course, teachers are in a position where it's difficult for them to speak on the record about what they're feeling and what they're experiencing. Have you had an opportunity to talk with teachers in a candid way?
Limited opportunities so far, and I think staffing is one of the biggest puzzles that districts have to figure out with all these different ways of teaching going on all at the same time. I know in Des Moines, now that they have some registration numbers, they're trying to figure out how they can space out students in different classrooms. Do they have enough different teachers to fill all the classrooms virtually and in person at the same time? And you end up with situations like you just mentioned, where teachers are stacked up with different grade levels and really stretched to the limit. So with all of those things on top of each other, the risk of the virus, the stress of teaching in different ways, there's a lot of concern among teachers of what they're being asked to accomplish and the risks that they're being asked to bear at the same time.
Let's go to our next guest, because it's not just teachers and students that are having a little trouble getting into the classroom this year. It's also a problem for student teachers. How do student teachers fulfill their graduation requirements, and how do schools accommodate them? Judy Coldiron is a retired West Des Moines teacher, and she currently supervises student teachers in the School of Education at Iowa State University. Hello, Judy.
Hi, how are you, Charity?
Good. Thank you so much for being here. And you have actually been going into classrooms to observe student teachers this year?
I have. I've been in two different school districts observing student teachers and practicing all the mask and shield protocols, and it's worked out pretty well. I think it's difficult for student teachers because things are very different. And just like the teacher previously said, there's lots of cleaning and lots of rules and regulations, but so far so good. The students that I'm going to start working with are called practicum students, and this is the stage in pre-service teaching where you practice in a school before you do your student teaching, and usually they do two different sessions, but all the practicum students are going to have to be virtual because it's been set up that way through Iowa State. So I met with part of my group yesterday, and they are extremely nervous because they don't know how it's going to work out, but I think it'll be okay. It's just that they have to be virtual, even if the school district they're working in is an on-site or an in-person school. So I think they're mainly worried that they're not going to get any practice in how to manage a classroom of students. So that's a little bit different than the student teachers.
Yeah, well, and you are in a unique position because you're one of the few people who has actually observed what's going on in the classroom. Of course, visitors are not allowed in schools for the most part this year due to safety concerns.
Correct.
So can you give me an impression of how do you think things were going in the classrooms you visited?
I think they're going pretty well, but it is stressful. In one of the districts, the classroom teacher also has to manage what the online students that are needing a little bit of help. And in another district, the district has assigned certain teachers to do all the online for a grade level. So that's a little bit different. So I think everybody's doing it a little differently. But everybody's sort of stressed and worried about making sure they're getting everything done the way they are used to. But teachers are pretty flexible, and that's what I emphasize with my student teachers and my practicum students. Be flexible and relax, and things will work out, hopefully. So we're just kind of going one day at a time with our students and student teachers. We'll be switching on the 9th is the last day in session for two of my student teachers, and then they go to a different placement starting the 12th or the 19th. So I'll be in some other districts starting next week.
Well, Judy, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. And please stay safe as you continue to go into schools. And I want to turn now to a teacher who is back in the classroom. Caleb Grant teaches in Waterloo. He is a PE teacher and a coach at Central Middle School in Waterloo. Caleb, hello.
Hey, Charity, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for talking with us again. And tell me what your classroom looks like as a PE teacher this year.
It's a lot different than it has been in the past. I think a third of our kids here at Central did virtual. So One, so the class size is smaller. The kids wear masks. That was one, I think it was kind of weird at first, you know, just kind of kids have a mask and then you want them to run around. But I think lately we've kind of, the kids kind of gotten used to it. I've gotten used to it, just kind of wearing a mask and trying to get my voice out of that mask and make sure that they understand me. We kind of modified the sports that we play. So they get little mask breaks here and there where they can go off to the side, take a mask down, take a breather, and then come back in. But I think the one is just the mask, and they carry all their stuff with them. So since we're not using lockers, so they carry their desk shields, book bags, you know, all that stuff comes with them to every class. So that's another thing that's different. And we're not using locker rooms, so they put everything in the hallway. So they have the book bag, the desk shields. And the desk shields is the thing they, in their classroom, they kind of like a plexiglass thing that they put up at their desk.
And the students can do that themselves?
Yeah, they just carry it around with them for every class, so even lunch. But no, in PE, so it's, like I said, just have a mask on, and like we try to go outside as much as we can, because when you're outside, you can kind of have a, you can kind of take a little bit more mask breaks. But you could, I think like my first week when I was doing it, you could tell the kids weren't used to all the moving around with the mask on, just the breathing, so. And then we just kind of figured it out. Just, hey, if you would need to take a little break, just walk away, you know, get far away from the other kids, take a quick mask break, and then put your mask back on and then get back at it. But we try not to do as many rigorous activities as we have we done in the past, just so that they can keep the mask on and the breathing part for regards to PE. Regards to coaching.
Oh, yeah, sure. You're also a volleyball coach. How is that going?
Yeah, that's a little, you know, they have the mask on as well. And even like for games, we just had a game yesterday. So if you're on the bench, everybody has a mask on. Coaches keep the mask on the whole time. If you're in the game, you can. It's just the little things we have to remember, kind of sanitizing the ball, that they substitute out, have make sure they sanitize if they come out. So it's kind of like, I think some of your teachers earlier were talking, just kind of the rules, procedures, you know, just remembering to do all of that. So, I mean, the fact that I do appreciate the fact that our kids are able to play organized sports and play games against other schools. So, you know, the other schools, if we go somewhere, they have to bring their own balls. Only one team's in there warming up at a time. So there's, and then the other team comes and then we stay separated. There's social distancing in the stands. Fans have to wear masks. I think the first game it was a little packed, so now we put all the girls on the floor. So it's just kind of just, you know, just trying to remember, hey, I got to remember this, I got to remember that. So I just kind of keep a, kind of a list of what I need, make sure I have done.
Yeah,
we got a game.
Definitely a learning curve for everybody. Do you, I guess, what concerns you the most? What is the thing that you feel isn't working?
Is it working? I think it's, I don't know if it's really, I think it's just getting the kids used to that new normal of the mask. You'll get some kids that sometimes they'll take the mask down and then they'll just, they'll leave it, they'll forget, and I'm having to remind the kids. I think we remind a couple adults at the games, just sometimes, I think, just that reminder, hey, the importance of why we're doing it. You know, we try to reiterate that to the kids, hey, this is why we're doing it, this is why we're doing this, and sometimes that can get a little bit where, you know, the kids kind of forget, but then they're kids, so we just kind of remind them.
Yeah.
I don't know, in regards to this not work, yeah, I mean, be honest with you, Charity, just, there was a time where we thought we weren't going to have any organized sports. We were just not going to be able to have anything. So the fact that we have something just makes me really appreciate kind of what Waterloo School District have done, you know?
Yeah.
So especially for the kids, because, I mean, they've had a long break. A lot of them hadn't had anything organized. You know, middle school for most of our kids is the first time they participate in an organized sport. So just having that opportunity for them.
Yeah.
But I think we have pump sprays that we spray down all the equipment, the nets, you know, we're done. So I think it's, like I said, the only thing I think sometimes that for me and wherever I'm finding myself always is just the kids and the mask. Just remind, I'm sure other teachers are having that as well. They, you know, after a while, I mean, I've worn a mask and eventually I get so uncomfortable and I kind of pull it down.
Yeah.
So as well. So, and I know the kids probably get real uncomfortable.
Right. Maybe a little less impulse control there. Caleb,
yeah,
thank you so much for sharing your experience with us.
All right. Thank you.
Caleb Grant is a PE teacher at Central Middle School in Waterloo, and he's also a volleyball coach. And Grant, we only have a couple of minutes left here, and I have so many responses. This one from another anonymous person. He says, I'm both a parent and a teacher. I decided not to teach this year, and I have my 13-year-old online. Our cousin passed away from COVID-19, and that made this pandemic very real. Not just a number, but a name of a real loved one. I love Iowa and Iowans, but we are in a difficult situation where there are no good choices, and the costs are steep no matter how you look at it. We have to make sacrifices for the good of our kids, families, and society. 2020 has really tested us. I hope and pray we emerge from this pandemic stronger. And I've also noticed I've got a couple of comments here from teachers who are teaching online, and the majority of the teachers who are teaching online seem pretty positive about it. Renee says, I'm teaching online seventh graders. We're starting to get into the swing of things. Lots of tech issues, but I feel like there are a lot of positive things happening as well. And this is from Ariel, and she is a K-6 special education teacher. She says, I serve students with complex disabilities. Most use alternative forms of communication and all need full-time support from their families. Everyone on my roster selected the online option. Teaching virtually has been an incredible experience. I'm humbled every day by families who allow me into their home each day via Zoom. They're so willing to be flexible, vulnerable, and open to teaming together to make the best out of the situation. I've also been learning so much. I feel like a college student again as I learn about bringing my best teaching to a distance platform. I know special education has been continuously cited as a service that isn't doable in a virtual setting, but we are doing it and doing it well. And I'm so proud to be on these IEP teams teaching and keeping kids and paras safe at home. And Grant, we only have about a minute left, but I am struck by the incredible commitment, flexibility, and creativity that we are seeing from teachers and districts around the state this year.
Well, they know they have a job to do, and there are a lot of different ways to do it and a lot of different new things that they're being asked to try. And so it's good to hear teachers really embracing that and making the most of the situation, because whether they're online or in person, they're having to do things differently. You know, going to hybrid isn't necessarily what everyone wants. Staying virtual isn't what everyone wants. And there are benefits and drawbacks of both of those. When students are in the hybrid model, they're spending at least a couple days a week where they may just be learning on their own. So you have more time in person, but you also have more time on your own. So trying to get through those different trade-offs and come up with a system that works for teachers and students is definitely a tall task. And I think it's great to see teachers and students really stepping up and finding ways to get that done.
Well, Grant, I hope you will come back again in another month or so as we continue to learn from this situation. And thank you for all of your reporting on Iowa schools.
I will. Thanks for having me.
Iowa Public Radio reporter Grant Gerlach. And I heard from so many parents and teachers this hour. I wasn't able to share all of the comments, but thank you very much for sharing your experiences. And again, we will continue talking about education in Iowa. It's obviously one of the greatest challenges that we face in this pandemic. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, Matt Alvarez, and Dennis Reese. You can subscribe to our podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.